Welcome. You're listening to the Grow Ortho Podcast, presented by HIP. This podcast is dedicated to orthodontists who want to stand strong in their market and be leaders in their community. Now, on to today's show.
Shannon, thanks so much for being on the Grow Ortho Podcast today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Definitely. So tell listeners and viewers who you are, maybe some hobbies, personal life, but then also about your business.
My name is Shannon Patterson, and I'm a partner at Benson Koppel and Associates. We are about to go through a rebrand, so it's going to be Benson Koppel Patterson and Associates. We're going to be doing that in the next couple of months, probably before the AAO. Traditionally, we are a valuation and transition firm and also doctor recruiting. And we are ortho-specific, ortho only. So we do a lot of speaking. We collect a lot of data from a lot of different groups and really put a story around that. We're big educators in the residency programs and do a lot with the AAO. And we've just been around a long time and know ortho really well. So what we really say is if you're going to have a transition, whether it's in your practice or your career, you know, you should talk to somebody and, you know, hopefully it would be us, but there's other firms out there. On a personal note, I have three amazing children. They are grown now. So an empty nester. I love to fly fish and camp. And I have a dog that I adore named Marley.
So within orthodontics right now, what is the hot topic? What are most orthodontists talking about, worried about? What's keeping them up at night?
Well, I think the hot topic is definitely the economy. I think people, you know, are concerned. Numbers were down slightly last year. This year, probably anticipating much of the same thing. January was a big month just because of all those HSA and FSA accounts coming in. February was a good month, but we had an extra day in February, which really accounted for that bump in production that we saw. What we're hearing so far for March is it's not great. Future exams are down. People are concerned about that. It's an election year. The economy's not great. We really anticipate, you know, hopefully first quarter next year that we really pull out of this. And we, you know, the one thing that we know from historical data is when times are down because of the economy, we end up, you know, having a bump and kind of a pent-up demand coming out of that. So we anticipate first quarter of 2025 being, you know, pretty big.
It's interesting the way that orthodontists look at their business too, because we find that a lot of orthodontists are being reactive each month or even in some cases sooner, you know, like this week. And really ever since COVID is when we saw volatility, meaning, you know, some practices would just blow it out of the water. Others would be down. Random occurrences within months, because typically you would have your seasons for ortho and summer always being the biggest. And sometimes that would change depending on the location. Are you guys seeing that too? Just maybe some atypical things going on within orthodontics?
I think so. You talked about geography. I mean, I think there's some areas that are definitely feeling more of an impact than other areas. And I think that rural practices are probably doing a little bit better, because I think that their patient base is just a little bit different. They probably have always had a budget and stuck to it versus the bigger metropolitan areas. I mean, you've also had some population loss in certain areas, but I think that people are affected by the cost of living in different areas. It's just gotten so expensive in some areas that it's definitely geographically, you know, dependent.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely some markets doing much better than others. Like a lot of people have moved to Florida. That's where I'm at. And Florida as a whole is doing pretty well. It's interesting too, because you mentioned financing. And we also see that a lot of practices will have fairly high down payments, especially if they're heavy with indirect bonding, labs, Invisalign, what have you. And the practices that are able to be more flexible with just getting started, that is having a huge effect on conversion rate production as well. So that's kind of interesting. And I'm not sure if you guys have dived into that or have seen that as well.
We have, and you know, talking to young doctors that are associates and not really even practice owners, but doctors that are out and their associates and their conversions are being affected and they're just calling for advice, like, is this normal? Is this what's going on in the marketplace? What we find is a lot of associates that work for corporate models, not necessarily specialty-led corporate models, but like GP-led corporate models, they do have a high aligner fee, lab mm-hmm. fee. So starting, they want that $1,800 down, and their conversions are a wreck because of that.
Yeah.
So we definitely see if anybody's charging more for aligners, that their conversions are being affected. And that's probably why we see that dip in adult starts, is most adults are going to want aligners. And if mm-hmm. you're charging significantly more and the practice down the road isn't, that's going to be something that they look at. And then also people who are just definitely, like you said, more flexible on the financing. Some people are extending it. We never tell people what to do, but it's something that sure. you should definitely investigate. I think something that I've noticed that's really interesting this year is the conversions out of the pending bucket has gotten better. And probably what that is, in the last 2 years, practices were so busy that they really didn't worry about those pending patients, right? So we recommended treatment, you didn't start, really didn't worry about it. I think now that TCs probably have a little bit more time because the new patient exams are down, they're working that column a little bit more and reaching out to that patient and saying, well, what would it take to get you started? You know, did you go to your second opinion? And we're seeing that conversion in that bucket actually is higher than it traditionally has been.
Sure. And that's a great tip, because there's still a lot of practices who don't have a process for that. It's, you know, we work that segment whenever we have time. That's what I hear, you know. And so having an actual process for that, because yeah, it's the same thing here at HIP. Is it easier to go out and get new leads, or is it easier to actually take the person to the next step who already knows about us, we've already had a conversation with, maybe they've already been in the practice. In most cases, all these people you're talking about have been in the practice, had a consult. And so I think that's a really good tip for practices listening, is have a process, reevaluate your process for pending, and make sure that you're just being diligent and trying to help those people.
And it's not always about financing. A lot of people think, well, a pending patient means, you know, we told them to start, but you know, if they need to, you know, have another appointment, if they need to go out for hygiene, things like that, those TCs, there needs to be a process for following up with all of those leads. And what we found again is that bucket's increasing in conversions.
We could maybe chat about when to scale. You know, you guys obviously help add associate docs to practices. I'm curious your thoughts on when is the right time. I see a lot of orthodontists do this very early on. It seems like it's like the way now. It's like the talk within ortho, you know, it's like, all right, you need to buy more practices if you're not growing. And then maybe also hire other doctors. It's scary to me as a business owner when practices do that and their revenues and productions is still really low. So I'm curious what you guys see, if you see that, if you advise on that, and just best practices for when to scale.
We definitely have those phone calls all day, every day. You know, when should I hire an associate? And if I hire an associate, should I acquire another practice or, you know, start another mm-hmm. practice? And I think that there's really no easy answer for that, because I think it's really individual to that practice. I think that what we know very well is that younger doctor demographic. And what we find is typically associates don't want to be associates forever. So if you become a two-doctor practice, it's really, really important to make sure that you hone in with that associate, understand, you know, when their contract is ending, when to start that renegotiation process, because that's always the scary part. You can run a $3 million practice and do pretty well. When it starts getting a little bit bigger, people start getting a little stressed, and they think they need another doctor. Sometimes you don't really need another doctor. You might just need, you know, a CEO or a practice administrator that really understands, you know, how to run a practice and KPIs and all those things. So we do have a lot of those conversations, but I think that, you know, if you are going to grow by acquisitions and adding an associate and having a two-doctor schedule, that you're really in tune with that doctor being there. And if they are going to, you know, let you know, hey, I'm going to be moving on, I found my dream practice, you know, in Idaho, that you have enough time and runway to find a replacement.
Yeah, I think too, and this is just my personal opinion based on some of the conversations I've had, when I see younger practices do it, let's say they're more so in the beginning phases, you know, $1 million in production or so, and they've got a doctor. I mean, I've seen people with in a location producing 2 million, three doctors total. So you got the owner, two associates, heavy Invisalign. So there's a lot of lab fees. And you mentioned something, CEO, maybe a COO, some type of ops or leadership team. In most cases, that is overlooked. And the focus is I need to get more doctors in to help me. And if you look at a practice producing that, if there's efficiencies within the clinic on the business side, administrative side as well, and there's a leadership team to manage the team and adapt, change, grow the processes within the business, I think that's a better route. And I think it's something that isn't talked about enough within orthodontics. Doctors are very clinical. Obviously, they're brilliant. And so that's where their mind goes, is the clinical side, doctor side. But I always encourage people, let's put on our business hat. And a lot of times that means getting educated around the business of orthodontics, which really applies to any small business, just about, you know, maybe not something like e-commerce, but, you know, a lot of the levers are the same. So that's what I see, and just looking at profitability, like what is a good margin? What should I be aiming for within like a net profitability as a healthy business? And I guess my last bit, I'm going on a rant, but I always tell people, do you want to try and duplicate a D or C business or an A or B business? And you can definitely get your single location to where you want to be. This practice I'm mentioning, the 2 million, three docs, heavy Invisalign, I told him, man, you can easily double. And he just couldn't even believe it. Like, he couldn't conceive it. Like, how would I get to 4 million? I'm like, well, you're in a great area. The market's here. You know, yeah, you have some competitors, but that's not always a bad thing. That's a good thing. That's showing you there's a demand. This is a great area for ortho. I think we just need to focus on the business efficiencies, the team. And within this practice, there's very little leadership. And I'm referencing it because that's kind of the stereotype that I see a lot. We know the average practice, you would know better than me, but it's somewhere between 1.2 and 1.7 million-ish. But ortho is very scalable. You know, once you have the right processes and team in place, it can scale fast. So it's just so interesting because I, with all these young docs, and again, I'd love to know where all these conversations start. Like, yeah, get more locations, get more doctors. But we have started, HIP has started to speak at residencies. And this is part of what we're telling them is here's the things that, you know, just the little bit I know. I mean, I've only been doing this for 10 years. But really try to think like a business owner if you're going to be in private practice.
Oh, absolutely. It really is. When you think about this model compared to other businesses, there's very few businesses out there that are $3 million business and the owner does everything, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I first started in this industry 14 years ago, I came out of medical and I came out of the clinical side, and burnout was a real thing. And yeah. It was really refreshing to be in this industry, and we just didn't have burnout. I mean, every client I talked to seemed to be really happy. And the young doctors were even more happy. They were just starting their career. They were excited. And I definitely get more of those burnout calls, but practices have gotten bigger. I mean, I think we think the average practice is about 1.8 to 2.1, and that's big. And if, you know, you went to school to be a clinician, sometimes I get a phone call where people say, well, I want to hire a doctor because I really want to be more management and run the practice. And I kind of jokingly say, well, you should have gone to school and gotten an MBA, but you went to school to become an orthodontist. So you really shouldn't give up being an orthodontist. There are people right. that are much better at running and managing your practice than you are. And I think they just get so overwhelmed. They think if they do that part that they'll be happier. But the reality is, if you're a really good orthodontist, you don't want to step away from that. It's kind of like making the best salesperson the sales manager. It never works, right? So if you're, you know, it's a disaster, right? It's like, I was really good at sales, but I'm terrible at managing people. And I think that ortho, again, it's just one of the few businesses that it's a $3 million business and you don't have a COO or at least a practice administrator. And certainly not to knock, people that are out there that are office managers. But I think that when you get to a certain level, if you're not reskilling or upskilling that person to understand what they need to be doing, or having somebody that kind of has a history to understand that, it can be challenging because, you know, you don't just need a people person that all the team likes, right? Oh, everybody loves her. She's a great office manager. That's not really what you need when you get to a certain level. And if I was a young doctor today, and like you, you know, speaking with young doctors regularly, I tell them all the time, when I hit that $1 million mark, I'm looking for a high-end practice administrator that really can handle that piece so that I can focus, you know, meet with them, understand the growth of where you want to be and looking at all those metrics, because that's where the burnout comes from. You're an orthodontist all day long. And then at night you're going home and, you know, you're looking over all the reports, you're trying to pull the data, you're trying to think about marketing. It's a lot. So having somebody that really understands that can be hugely beneficial. And a lot of practices at that $2 million mark, you don't really need another doctor as much as you need somebody to kind of take that management piece off your plate.
100%. Have you ever read the book, The E-Myth?
No.
You should read this book. I'm curious what you would think about it. It's one of the best small business books. I think it's in maybe like, I don't know, a lot of different languages, maybe I want to say 50 million copies sold. It's a very popular book. And the author is Michael Gerber. So in the book, he talks about for a business owner, there's really three roles you can play. And typically it's a linear journey through each three as you grow. So the first is technician, and the second is manager, and the third is visionary. And I don't want to tick off any dentist or orthodontist. I don't mean right. like a dental tech. I mean, as right. an orthodontist, you're doing the work. You're actually seeing the patient, putting on braces, etc. That is a technical role. The manager, that's pretty easy. You're managing people, you know, you're giving them feedback, telling them what to do, traffic control. And then the visionary, obviously you're creating the goals, the mission, the vision, and you're casting that vision to the team. So the best businesses I have seen within ortho, typically the owner orthodontist they float between two roles. It's the technician and the visionary. Because 8 to 5 or whenever they're open seeing patients, you're right, 100%. They never need to move out of being the orthodontist unless they create this big practice or DSO or something, then obviously that's different. But let's just talk about your average $2 to $5 million practice, they should always be an orthodontist because that's going to be the best thing for the business in terms of producing.
Absolutely.
An orthodontist can produce $5,000-$10,000 an hour, you know, maybe more. I don't know. But then if there's nobody setting the mission, vision, and casting that, then the team is kind of lost. It's like, okay, why am I showing up? Is this just another job? There's no uniqueness to the brand or the culture. And so I think of Ernie McDowell, you may know him, All Smiles in St. Pete. He said, which I think I quoted him in one of these books, he said to me, Luke, when I show up at the practice, I work for Janet, my COO. You'd like what she says goes, because I'm confident she knows what she's doing. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, when we're having business meetings, strategic planning, I am the visionary.
Right.
And I connected that with the e-myth, and I'm like, man, yeah, this is... And, and then I started associating that with all the good practices I know. Fishbine, you know, the list goes on and on, is typically they have that vision. They have that mission. The team can help them refine it, especially like a COO or integrator, practice administrator. But then they're showing up and they're still a high performer within the orthodontic technical role.
Yes, 100%. And the team needs that. And what really surprises me sometimes is doctors who maybe want to bring on an associate that they really do kind of want to back away from that clinical role, or a lot of times they'll want to hire an associate because I have two locations. And if I could just get this other location off the ground, I could be so big. And, you know, post-residency is just an extension of your education, right? The one thing you have not learned how to do is sell a case. And I know that that's probably overused, but it's true. They really don't know how to be a leader in clinic. They really don't understand the kinds of questions they're going to get asked by moms. They just have not been in that environment yet. They have been students and they have, you know, studied the clinical aspect. And so being in that practice, with that younger doctor for a long onboarding process and really making sure that whether you're there or not there, they're doing things the same way that you would do them is pivotal. But I always tell doctors, I would not run two locations simultaneously. I would say, you know, work at least one or two days a week in the same office, because you are going to absolutely kill it on those days. The energy that you bring to the team and to the patients, sharing, you know, new patient exams and running the clinic, we see those practices get much bigger than doctors who are in separate locations, because that separate location is a younger doctor that really, you know, doesn't understand what you've done and how many years it's taken you to get there. And that's what people need to remember. Whether you're 10 years out or 20 years out, it took you all that time to build what you have, and to bring someone into that and push them out on their own sometimes can be a struggle, and not just on the doctor, but the team. So working together is a huge benefit for not only the young doctor, but the practice. And I think it re-energizes the senior doctor, but you're giving a lot of leadership and a lot of goodwill to that younger doctor when patients see you together and that you believe in them, because that's the biggest thing that young doctors struggle with is that goodwill's still not transferred over. You know, they still, when somebody calls, well, I don't want to see that doctor, I want to see this doctor. And the more patients and referrals and the team sees you together and believe in that doctor, they're going to follow suit.
Yeah, for sure. And we could talk about ego too, because I think to go back even even to team building, or I can do everything, I can be the manager just as good or better than anybody. It's letting go of the ego. And like you said, there are people who have been trained on the business. Maybe there's people who have done this for 10, 20, 30 years that you could hire into the practice already. So ego is a big thing. That's with any doctor, you know. We used to work with surgeons, and the ego was crazy. They say with surgeons, it's God complex. And the same thing applies here. if you let go of the ego, and especially with these doctors, younger associates, really being their mentor and wanting to not be the face or all over the posters in the office. And I had somebody say, yeah, I really need to promote my associates. And as he's talking, I'm looking around. I see like three graphics on the wall about him. Top dentist.
Yeah.
This award, that award. And he's like, yeah, everybody asked for me. And I'm like, yeah, I would ask for you too. There's nothing in here about the other doctors. So leading from the back, and I had to realize this, you know, Harrison, how do I promote him? How do I get him speaking at all the events? Mm-hmm. Not me, because I can't, I can't be everywhere. You know, you can't be everywhere. So how do I build up my team to where they can do it? And I love what you said about the doctor working in the location, because you can really prove to the associate what is possible. Maybe they think, I can only see 30 patients a day, and I'm like swamped. Well, maybe that was residency, but we do things a lot different. You could maybe see 80 patients. You know, here's how I do it. Show them it's possible, mentor them, and then maybe down the road, you know, as they grow and have that wisdom and that training, then they can just operate that location, you know, if they're the right person for that.
I think that's 100% right. I think something that we tell our doctors all the time is, as an employer, you have to do three things. You have to be, well, you don't have to do them, but a young doctor needs these three things. Yeah. They need a coach, they need a mentor, and they need a promoter. And coaching and mentoring are two very different things. A coach talks to you, you know, it's not like if you're out there playing basketball, Coach K saying, you know, Luke, how do you feel out there? What do you want to do? I mean, he's telling you, this is what you're going to do. And I think that young doctors need that, you know, in a positive way. But a mentor sometimes is someone, it's not necessarily you. Like working for you, it's hard for you to be my mentor. A mentor might be someone, you know, outside the practice. Sometimes a great coach can be a TC of, hey, this is what I would do. This is what I think you should say. But promoting and sponsoring is a huge part of a younger doctor's success that joins a practice. And for anybody that wants to bring an associate on, I think the things that we hear is, well, I don't want to promote somebody that isn't going to stay. But again, if you're not promoting them and you're, I hear this a lot. Oh, this associate's lazy. They don't take any dentist out to lunch. Well, I can assure you that that dentist doesn't want to go out with that associate. They want to go out to lunch with you. And the best thing to do is you to continue to go do those lunches, either while the associate runs the clinic or bring the associate with you and introduce them. Let them see you interact and how much faith that you have in this person. But just expecting an associate to plug in and do those kind of things is a challenge because, again, this is not something they had to learn how to do. So a lot of times what adding an associate will allow you to do is to grow by giving you some more time to work on those things. But expecting them to go out and do the promotion themselves, it's a fail. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. So have the right expectations going into it.
Yeah. You're a promoter and a sponsor. You're bringing this person on and transferring that goodwill to them of your reputation is pivotal.
I love that. Coach, mentor, promoter. Did I get it right? Perfect.
Yeah, you did.
When is it time to transition and how do you plan for that? There's, again, and I'm sure you see this way more than we do, but a lot of the older docs, more so in the autumn of their years, they think maybe I can keep going till I'm 80, you know, or 75. And then you have these younger docs who are like, well, you know, I really want to have a transition plan in place. And you know, how do I do that? And I'm sure that's when a lot of people come to you guys for guidance and help. But what is, you know, best or, and I'm sure it's individual based on the person's goals and setup, but how does somebody know it might be the right time to start that process?
That is a great question. So, and I kind of have a two-part answer. Transitions have changed tremendously. And it's just kind of evolved into, it's not what it was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, a doctor would think, okay, I'm ready to transition. I'm going to get my practice valued and I'm going to find a buyer and I'm going to sail off in the sunset. Mm-hmm. That is just not how it works anymore. For one factor is school debt has impacted younger doctors tremendously. And then you've kind of had, you know, the last 5 years has just been a lot, right? You had COVID, you have the staffing shortage, money's expensive, and I have tremendous school debt. So what we're seeing is the younger doctors still very much want to have equity in a practice, but they're a little standoffish of coming out of school and executing on a 100% asset sale and the senior doctor going away after 12 months. The second part of that is we have a new generation of doctors. And it's not as much as millennials as it's going to be the Gen Zs coming in. And they're a very collaborative group of young people. We also are almost at 60% females in residency and graduating. They tend to be drawn to more partnerships and small group practices. So what I'm advising people to do is, depending on the practice size and where you are in your career life cycle, is think about bringing someone on, because I think that what younger doctors are very drawn to is being able to come into a practice, work, and have the opportunity to buy in and become a partner. And then in, you know, 7 or 8, 10 years, when you're ready to leave, you know, you have somebody to buy the remaining 50% and they can bring someone else in. So we see a lot more people going that route just because the buyer base has changed. And the other part of that is there's a lot of acquisitions out there being made, like to your point earlier, of people who are already established and looking to grow their footprint and acquiring, you know, practices in the area as they come up. So that it's changed a little bit, but I think that, you know, if you're looking for a buyer and you're selling your practice, we tell doctors all the time, it's a 1 to 3 year process. If you're in a hard area, it could be 3 to 5 year process, because it's just sometimes more challenging, geographically dependent. Something else that's really changed in the resident base is 5 years ago, I would say 70% of them were married. And now 70% are not. So where they want to go has changed. You know, when you're married and you have a family, it's pretty easy to go to a rural area. If you're single, maybe not so much. So we watch a lot of the trends in the younger doctor base because we know potentially they're going to be the buyers. So that's something that we watch. And those trends affect the transitions tremendously.
Yeah, for sure. And we recently saw you guys, what was it, in St. Thomas?
Yes.
And, you know, you guys had talked about legacy and, you know, thinking about what that looks like. A lot of times as business owners, we are just in habits. Well, I mean, we're all creatures of habit, but, you know, you're showing up, you're doing the same thing. And if you're older listening to this and maybe you've been thinking about this, I would encourage you to zoom out, take some time and look at what your legacy looks like, not just as an orthodontist, maybe as a dad or a mom, or maybe you're a grandparent. And what's the best move for everybody? Because you get in a habit and it's like, oh, I can go till I'm 70 or 80. And I mean, that's great if that's what's best for everybody. But I was really drawn to what you guys were saying around that, because too few people really zoom out and think about it. And life is just so fleeting, you know, it can be gone like that. So I think that is a really important aspect too.
Absolutely. You know, when I came in this industry, it was about 2010, 11, 12 is the years I started working on this component. And it was coming out of a recession. There were not a lot of jobs and there were not a lot of practices for sale. People had, you know, were building up their retirement savings again. And so doctors were working longer. And the saying was, orthos don't retire, they die. And And I used to just think, what in the world are they talking about? But they would just work until the very end. And they would, you know, the practice would just get smaller and smaller and smaller. Because, you know, if you're 75 years old, everybody referring patients in town knows that you're 75 years old. And is this guy even going to be able to finish this patient if I send them over there? So, you know, that as you age, it really does impact your practice. But I think that bringing in a doctor, you know, depending on where you're at, and if you're able to do that and want to do that, it can re-energize everything. And then you kind of have an exit plan in the future. So again, we're just seeing a significant rise in partnerships. But, and you know, ortho's different than general dentistry. You can't just close your doors one day. I mean, you've taken on a contract. So it is, you really do have to think about your exit plan, because no matter what, you're probably going to continue to work for 18 to 24 months, even if you stop taking new patients and stopped starting treatment. So it's not something that you can just walk away on. You really do have to plan and understand the timeline.
Yeah. Get a plan in place. Be strategic.
Yes.
What is the next generation of ortho?
So the next generation of ortho is, you know, everyone's talking about it. We've had a huge gender shift. And so we are definitely graduating more females than males, much more diverse demographic than what it used to be. And all of that is really impacting the migration of patterns of where doctors go and where they practice. So it's something that we pay attention to very closely. But I think the young doctors are absolutely amazing. There's a lot of stigma around they don't want to work. They only want to work 3 days a week. They don't want to own a practice. And we find the exact opposite. They're very eager to get out there and start their careers. They very much want to still own a practice someday. They just, again, are a little gun shy of popping out a residency and buying something right away. But we think that partnerships are going to probably be, and corporate entities are probably going to be the predominant modality in the future, just because we have had that gender shift and the females tend to be drawn more towards partnerships and small group practices.
Are most young doctors coming out of residency and going corporate? What's that look like?
Sure. We get that question a lot. And the data shows, you know, they're definitely not going all corporate. I would say that about 30% of residents are joining corporate practices. What we find young doctors are really looking for is really a practice with a great culture where they can really hone in on becoming, you know, a good orthodontist. They really want to, again, have that onboarding, that coaching and mentoring experience. They, you know, have heard good and bad stories out there about, you know, joining corporate groups. Most of the specialty-led groups are doing great. It's definitely some of the groups that are more, you know, dental service organizations where they struggle, but they're really looking at that first job as an extension of their education and really hoping to join a practice that is got a, you know, a trained, skilled clinical team to help them get the conversions, good TCs. You know, they're very leery of, you know, sometimes I'll get a phone call from someone and they'll say, well, gosh, the TC started the same day I did. And, you know, really putting a doctor in an environment that doesn't have the best team. Like if you had two locations, you know, they're not going to do as well as if you put them with a team that really, you know, knows how to run that clinic. So they're really looking, again, at that first job, looking for a great culture, looking for a highly skilled team, somebody that's going to take time and coach them and mentor them. And we always say, you know, hey, if they have a great first experience, they might not ever leave. So, you know, it's really important.
So if there's somebody listening, watching, and they want to know more, they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
We would love for them to give us a call or reach out via email. And I believe you're going to be sharing that information.
Shannon, thanks so much for coming on the Grow Ortho podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about HIP or any of the topics in this episode, send an email to hello@hipcreativeinc.com. That's hello@hipcreativeinc.com. Or jump over to our website at hip.agency.